It used to be a thing. You used to see it on old letters, and I guess if you know me well, you will expect me to say yes. You also see it in church records and in church minutes. The letters DV, Deo Volente. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. My Latin is not very good, but it means the Lord willing. It used to be commonplace. It used to be part of a common language amongst believers. I will see you soon, the Lord willing. We will meet again next Sunday, the Lord willing. But yet that seems to have slipped out of favor, and it's caused me to wonder why. Is it because the world we have lived in has changed? With an advent of clean water, better diet, modern medicine, we've begun to take for granted that tomorrow will come. Which leads me to another question. If I were to ask you the question, do you think the Lord will return tomorrow? And by that I mean the day after today, not some vague time in the future. And by that I mean come with all his glory and majesty, not simply come to take an individual home. I wonder what you'd say. The Church of Scotland minister, Robert Murray McShane, is said to have done that exact thing with his deacons. He asked them one by one, do you think the Lord will come tomorrow? And each one thought carefully and shook their head and said, no, I don't think he will. And then he quoted to them from Matthew 24, but the day and the hour no one knows, not even the angels, nor the Son, nor the Father. As it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. If there is a motto for Advent, it is keep watch. And if there is a reason to keep the practice and tradition of Advent, it is to remember to keep watch. Because Christmas is significant. And don't underestimate my estimation, my understanding of Christmas. I hold it in high esteem. In fact, the early church had a much higher view of Christmas, of the incarnation, the coming of Christ, and wrote much more about that than it did the crucifixion. It's only later that the church grasps the significance of the crucifixion. And yet, as important as Christmas is, as important as the life-changing moment that God, as God enters our world and changes it forever, is Advent is equally as significant. Because if Christ's coming changes our lives in the nativity, the expectation of him coming keeps us on our toes in the here and now as we live day by day as the followers of Jesus. It keeps us on our toes as individuals. It keeps us engaged with being church as the people of God. When in 1908, Robert Baden-Powell published his motto, Be Prepared, in his handbook Scouting for Boys, he wrote that to be prepared, you are always in a state of readiness, mind and body, to do your duty. I wonder if we are prepared, not simply prepared for Christmas. Are we in that constant state of readiness for the Lord's return? And that preparedness is made even more acute by the fact Jesus says that no one can know. No one can know the hour of the Lord's return, not the angels, not even the Son, not even Jesus himself. And this is an important statement that Jesus makes about himself. He's saying that even the Son does not know the day and the hour of his returning. And in saying it, Jesus is revealing his self-limiting, his decision to limit his power, even though he is by very nature God. He is willing to remain uninformed. I wonder what that says about our quest for knowledge, particularly our knowledge about the future. I wonder if there's an antidote here to those who would seek fortune tellers and psychics to help them know what the future might hold. Because if Jesus, the one who is actually God in person, incarnate, is willing to limit himself and say, I do not need to know the day and the hour of my return, I wonder whether there are things in the future that actually we're better off not knowing until they come to us. But there's something else here as well. Because in his willingness to forego all this knowingness, the omniscience of in regard to the day and the hour, it's interesting that Matthew picks it up here, because in other places, Jesus does know the future. So it is about this return that he is deliberately willing to not know. You see Jesus knowing the future, particularly in John's gospel. You see it at the wedding at Cana when he explains his time has not yet come in John 2:4. You see it as he speaks about the 12 in John 6:70. When he says he's chosen these 12 and yet he knows one of them will betray him, one he describes as the devil. You see it in John 11, when he goes to Lazarus' graveside, knowing that Lazarus will rise again. And yet here in this conversation about his coming, he willingly remains unknowing. And I wonder whether this is a case of Jesus being willing to both submit himself to human limitations of not knowing, and in doing so, modeling something for us. I wonder what it says about our view of the future, not knowing what might happen in the years ahead, but willing to trust in God along the way. Willing to say the future, whatever it holds, is out there, and we will trust God in the here and now for that which is to come. But there's something else here as well. Because in willing to not know and yet to live and act in a specific way is the key to the whole of this section of Matthew's account. Because in not knowing the day or hour, Jesus emphasizes two things: the unexpected nature of his return and the activity and preparedness that accompanies waiting. Commenting on the unexpectedness of his return, Jesus draws the inspiration from Noah, when everyone was about their day-to-day business, right up until it started to rain. In this respect, not only was there an unexpectedness, there was also an unpreparedness. Now, preparing for something that is unexpected is not impossible. But history is littered with famous stories of people who've been unprepared, caught surprised by something. The preparing for the unexpected is not impossible, but it is difficult. It takes a certain type of thinking. Some would call it a certain type of paranoia, seeing things before they're actually there. But it enables people who can do that to see the possible dangers that are not obvious to ordinary people like ourselves. To them, it seems obvious. To us, it seems incredible. It's incredible that we don't see it. This is the work that health and safety assessments. Health and safety assessors are brilliant at seeing accidents before they happen. And they do a fantastic job at it in preparing us to be prepared for what might happen. But there's a danger, of course, with being prepared. And that is that we become complacent. It's one thing to have a bag packed, ready to go at a moment's notice. It's quite another to keep that bag up to date when the waiting to go at a moment's notice goes on longer than a week or two. When it stretches into months and even years, making sure the paperwork that you're carrying with you and the clothes you put in the bag still fit, the paperwork up to date and the clothing still fit, that takes constant vigilance. The danger with preparedness is if we have to prepare and be prepared for a long time, ready to spring into action, so easily we slip into complacency. And with complacency comes, after time, we are no longer prepared. And this is where Jesus picks up the issue in the parable of the house of the owner, who would have known to have been there and been present if he knew the burglar was coming. But it leaves me wondering about times when we experience something that we're not prepared for. And the implications here is that the disciples were to be prepared for the Lord's sudden return. And they would be prepared to doing all the standard routine things, keeping short accounts with God in their prayers, regularly confessing their sins, continually seeking ways to express the values of the kingdom in their context, keeping busy in their preparedness. Maybe it's keeping busy in our preparedness is an antidote to complacency, the complacency that so easily creeps in as we wait and we keep on waiting for the Lord's return, recognizing that actually it's been for many generations that we have waited. Jesus picks us up with the parable of the two servants, the one who keeps the household routine going, and as a result cares for the other servants by preparing food in the right time, and the other who treats his fellow servants poorly and ends up drifting into bad company. In the first case, the servant is commended. In the second, the servant faces judgment, and a somewhat gruesome judgment at that. And there's something here about routines that keep us focused. In the case of the first servant, it is the routine of caring for the rest of the servants, ensuring food is provided at the proper time. And for us, that means keeping the routine of church. Whether we come in person or join online, it is that routine of showing up and encouraging one another to show up. One of the biggest challenges that seems to have come from in a post-pandemic church life is that when church buildings were closed, folks simply got out of the habit of coming for worship. And while many joined online, for some, the offering was something was not the complete answer, but rather than hold the tension of online not being all it could be, but being something when we could do nothing else, they simply stopped coming. And having got out of the habit of either joining online and being with people, and eventually when we opened again, joining in person if they were able to, they simply drifted away. And regaining the habit is becoming increasingly difficult, if not impossible. And thus they become part of what a group of people, as academics know them, as post-church or de-churched. Those who've lost touch. Well, I'm pretty sure that I don't want to return to the 17th century. And while I think some of the process of the Baptist congregations in the 17th century was somewhat draconian, the fact that when they gathered at a church meeting, one of the items they talked about was who they hadn't seen at worship the previous week says something. And not only did they talk about who they had not seen, they dispatched a couple of church members to go and visit this person to find out why they had not been. Now, I know there's an underlying tension with that. People knocking on your door saying, you weren't at church on Sunday. But there is something of a pastoral concern here. A following up. Is everything all right? We've not seen you. There's something in the activity of keeping the church together as we, to use an old Baptist term, walk together and watch over one another as we wait for the Lord's return. Of course, complacency is not always, is not the only issue that accompanies constant state of waiting. Because in waiting and having to wait continually with no sense of an end point of that waiting, we can easily become paralyzed with waiting and therefore become idle. The Apostle Paul addresses this in his second letter to the church in Thessalonica. In what is perhaps the earliest letters we have from Paul, he confronts believers who've become so caught up in waiting that they are doing nothing. And Paul gets quite upset with them. In fact, he says, those of you who don't do any work are not going to eat. This might seem a bit extreme. But I wonder if you've ever put off a project because you've wondered whether it will actually be worth it. I wonder whether you've been preparing to sell a house or move from one rental to another, and you know there's a job that needs doing in the garden or in the house that actually you really should do. But because you're selling it or you're moving on, you wonder whether you can be bothered. I wonder whether in a constant state of waiting as the people of God, we can not only become complacent, we can become idle. As we wait for the Lord's return, we withdraw and we stop being involved in the work of the kingdom. Being good news to the poor, being good news to the people around us. Of course, we've seen the antidote of this already, keeping busy. Maintaining the routine of good practices, of meeting together for prayer, of meeting for Bible study, of meeting to bring the life of church before God, and meeting regularly for worship, and meeting regularly to serve our community together. We see from the parable of the two servants, the danger of not keeping busy, the danger of not keeping good practices are only too real. Jesus picks this up with the second servant in the parable of the two servants. He, the one who treats the servants badly and picks up with poor company because he is waiting so long and thinks that actually his master's never going to return. I wonder if you've ever had that experience. Spending time with people you deeply love, but who bring out the worst in you. I have to admit, I have some very good friends whom I love dearly and enjoy their company and will seek it at a moment's notice. But I'm also aware the more time I spend with them, the more the bits of me that I don't like emerge. Truth is, we find it very easy to be drawn away from the path of following Jesus. We find it very easy to be drawn away from that life-transforming event that is being church together. And when we spend time with folk who need to hear, need to experience the life-changing love of Jesus, it's worth recognizing that we need actually to come back together at times, to be renewed and restored ourselves, to ensure we don't lose sight of what it is to be a follower of Jesus. As I began, I reflected on the fact that we're using the letters DV is less common these days. I began by reminding ourselves that we only meet again if the Lord is willing. And the fact that tomorrow comes is in the Lord's hands. And I dare to suggest that while Christmas is significant and a significant and life-changing event, Advent puts us an edge to our faith. Advent keeps us on our toes because in Advent we will remember that we are waiting for the Lord's return. And tomorrow is not a certainty, it is a gift from God. And we should anticipate God's return. But here in Matthew's Gospel, in the teaching of Jesus, we discover that while Advent is a time for waiting, it's a time of waiting with purpose. Advent is a reminder that we are to be prepared. In the words of Baden-Powell, we are to be always in a state of readiness, in mind and body, to do our duty. And so I'm wondering, on this, the first Sunday in Advent, how prepared are we for the Lord's return? And what are the things we practice again and again and again to ensure we are prepared, that we do not become complacent, that we do not become idle in our waiting, that keep us sharp and in touch with the Lord, keep us in step with Jesus, keep us ready and waiting for his glorious return? I wonder. Amen.